Oh, we're going to shit. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm Elisa. I'm an addict. Narcotics, a Brazilian full of it. Narcotics Anonymous rescued me from the depths of despair and gave me back my life. I was born in Rio de Janeiro and grew up in the north of Brazil in a big family. My father was angry and full of morals, but my mother was gentle and really good to us. Life was difficult, but I felt loved. We were taught to love others and be responsible. I thought of myself as special. I was 17 when I got drunk for the first time. I hated the taste, but loved the way it made me feel. It was like the doors of the universe were open to me. In 1974, I started dancing with a folklore company and was introduced to marijuana by another dancer. I absolutely loved the way I felt. Something was glowing inside me, making me feel strong. After that first one, I wanted another and another. When we went to smoke, he took me behind the theater and told me not to tell. The secrecy was very exciting. The progression to other drugs came soon. We traveled in Europe, and even without speaking other languages, we found drugs. I became more and more dependent on using. I was invited to stay in London and join a Brazilian theater company. Most of the actors used, and I felt at home. In the play, all the actors were nude on stage. The first night, I got really loaded to be able to take off all my clothes. When the company went back to Brazil, I stayed in London. I spent all my money on drugs and wound up living in a squat with other addicts, stealing from shops to eat, dancing topless for money. I experimented with acid with another addict. I tell you, we got more than we asked for. I got pregnant, and the decision to have an abortion was like deciding what to eat. There were no feelings today when I think about it. I feel a lot. 2 days after the abortion, I was introduced to cocaine. That love affair lasted more than 10 years. The dance company was rehearsing another show, so I went back. I took LSD with me to sell. It was crazy, but I was so arrogant, I never thought about consequences. In Brazil, I started dealing. I knew it was dangerous, but I felt invisible. I was approached by a buyer, and we arranged to meet. I was set up, and I am alive today only because I mentioned a friend one of them recognized. When they left, I was shaking, my heart beating so fast I thought it would explode. One of them got arrested, and someone told me that the police were looking for a woman with red hair. That was me. I shaved my head. I got pregnant again and had another abortion. In Brazil, that was very difficult. I went to a backstreet doctor and contracted an infection. I was in pain, and I had to tell my mother so she could take me to a private doctor. I knew my mother was suffering, and my sisters were all angry. My family didn't know how to deal with me. They didn't know what was going on, but they knew it was serious. I was stealing from them to get drugs. I was so unhappy. I figured a figure of despair and denial, lying, pretending things were okay. Everything that I did like there was no tomorrow. I was powerless. At the end of the next tour, I stayed in London again and met a man who would become my love, my husband and my hostage. I moved in with him. I was so happy that for a while, I didn't use much. My boyfriend was supporting me. I looked after the flat and studied English and so to make money. We were happy. We went to a crazy party. They had everything. That night, my boyfriend couldn't find me to go home. I returned 2 days later with an excuse. I started using cocaine again, smoking grass every day, and becoming unreliable. My boyfriend was taking such good care of me, and I was behaving so badly. I didn't see what was happening, but I started using more and more and hiding from him. I got a contract to work as an entertainer in Cannes, Monaco, and Nice. The show was in the evenings. All we did during the day was go to a beach and use. I was high all the time. I discovered my addiction to gambling. I could not stop until I lost all the money I had taken with me and all the drugs were gone. I had an affair. I felt guilty, but I was an addict wanting more of whatever was available. I was using cocaine all the time. One night, I used so much before the show that I couldn't sing. My voice didn't come out and my nose started bleeding. I had to leave the stage. That had consequences for a whole group, but I didn't care. When the manager came to talk to me, I flirted with him until it was forgotten. In 1980, I went to work in the Caribbean. One night after the show, I went out on a yacht with a man. We used a lot. He passed out. I was half conscious and I knew something was wrong. I could feel my heart beating inside my mouth and my left side was paralyzed. I thought quite calmly, I am going to die. Then I thought, I don't want to die. And I realized to my horror that we were in the middle of the sea. I was losing my senses. I felt really frightened. I prayed to God not to let me die. I promised that I wouldn't use again. Somehow I was able to turn on the shower and the cool water helped the circulation return. When I got back to where I was staying, one of the musicians was using. He offered and I took. I was powerless and my life was unmanageable. When my boyfriend met me at the airport, he didn't recognize me. He was horrified. He said I looked like death. I had lost a lot of weight. For the next 2 years, I did weekend shows in different cities, taking my drugs with me. Sometimes I was aware of the madness. It was like my body was twisted, my hands gripping in the glass so tight that it could break. I was unmanageable, confused, and unhappy. My boyfriend asked me to marry him, and we went to Brazil. Even on my wedding day, I was high. I was just able to stand through it all, not embarrassing him or my family too much. My last year of using was a nightmare. I stopped performing or even taking care of myself. I didn't care what anyone thought. I would go to dealers and come home days later. I was called to do a gig in Paris and thought I could do with a change of scene. After the performance, I went out to this day. That evening is a total blackout. On my way back to London, I stood out like a sore thumb in a tight leopard skin dress, attracting attention. I was arrested in the airport in London. I was really angry. I didn't know why they were arresting me. I had this policeman saying to me how bad using drugs was. And in my head, I was saying, yeah, yeah, that was the beginning of the end of my using. It was August 1986. My recovery journey began when a friend took me to an NA meeting. We had used together and he was 9 months clean. I was very sick, very thin, and didn't know if I was coming or going. My husband sent me to a treatment center. I didn't feel human. In place of me, there was a huge pool of arrogance, denial, delusions, fear, pain, despair. It was more than I could bear. After being in treatment for 3 months, I left waving my middle finger at everyone. Having been abstinent for 3 months and having gone to NA meetings, even reluctantly, it was clear to me that I was done using. But I had to make sure. Everything I had heard in meetings was true. My short, devastating relapse left me with feelings I couldn't understand, and I went back to treatment. It was hard to go back, but I am grateful for having found courage and determination to stay and really look at the disease that wanted me dead. The emotional pain was intense, and there were moments when I thought I was going to die. But the love and care of other addicts helped me to carry on and to take it a day at a time. Sometimes I could only take it a minute at a time, and that was okay too. Surrender allowed me slowly to return to humanity. I recognized that I was dead inside. I was physically, spiritually, and mentally sick. I decided to stop fighting and let people in. And bit by bit, I was restored to sanity. I went to a halfway house for women. My first thought was, but I hate women. I told that thought to go away, and it worked. I do that a lot. I began to look at my anger, self-pity, and denial about what I did when I was using. Trusting the process, using the program, being helped and helping others. I found that I had compassion and that I cared. When I did the steps 1, 2, and 3 for the first time, it was like switching on the light. I started waking up every morning with a new feeling inside me, hope. Writing step 4 was definitely a turning point. I was able to face all the rubbish and start to recognize the good in me. I realized that I could nourish it and become a better person. There was a lot of work to do, but I wasn't afraid to let go, grow up, and go forward. Going through step 5, sharing with another human being the true nature of my wrongs, it was one of the most humbling things I've ever done. The day I did step 5, it was raining. The sky was covered in dark clouds. Afterwards, I went to a walk on the beach. It was really cold and I was crying. When I looked up there, was a patch of blue in the sky, and the sun shone for a minute for me. That was my higher power saying to me that I was going to be okay. I felt happy, a spiritual awakening. Narcotics Anonymous is in my life. It has allowed me to see, to feel, to be the real me, and to achieve great things over the years. I could not be where I'm at today if I didn't practice prayer and meditation. My higher power is loving, kind, and truly my friend. I learned to accept my life as it is, not as I would like it to be. Working the steps is still a primary purpose to my life. I love going to meetings and growing. I like talking to other addicts and always have time for the newcomer. Recovery gave me the opportunity to become a mother, one of the most wonderful things that has happened to me. Life is not perfect. When my daughter was 3 years old, she was diagnosed as autistic. Through the years, she has been a real challenge. She is lovely and we can have fun together, but at times she is impossible to live with. I am lucky to have such a supportive husband. We've been married for 20 years, and when I can't cope, he takes over. My daughter is 16 now, and we have a son who is 13. The program helps me with my life and its challenges. Today, I believe that everything is going to be all right. I have some difficult days, but I have tools to help me see the way through. When I came to recovery, I was emotionally and spiritually dead. It was like I was in a deep, dark hole. I could not see anything, no hope, only despair. Going to meetings, sharing things started to make sense. I learned from other people's experiences, being willing to shut up and listen, doing service, having the courage to leave my safe environment, I changed. Before I knew, it was out of the hole for good, with huge prospects for my life. I practice the 12 steps daily, and I'm grateful that today I can admit when I am wrong. I can learn from my mistakes. I am not so hard on myself anymore. I am 18 years clean. My recovery journey is full of wonderful happenings. I love my life, my sponsor, and my sponsees. I have my own business. If someone had told me when I came into recovery that I would be able to manage my own business, I would have thought they were joking. NA also helped me go back to singing. I was invited to share at a convention, and when I finished, everyone asked me to sing. I didn't know what to do, but they kept shouting, sing, sing. And to my surprise, I started singing and I loved it. Thanks, NA, with the help of the steps, a power greater than myself, sponsorship and service, I've been able to see my potential. I found me.
I'm so glad we found you. And without any further ado, Wally Adam, thank you so much for filling in at the speaker jam last minute to Lucia. Lucia C. from Brazil.
Thank you. Thank you, Francis. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Sorry for the people in the other meeting. You heard my story before. You heard me sharing before. But I learned that normally when you're gonna do, you're invited to do a chair, you plan the chair that you want to share, and then you go, you share another, when you share, it's another share, and then we finish, you wanted to have done differently. Then I know that happens, then I'm gonna just relax and, one thing that I must say, listening to the story of Connor, one thing that I didn't have problem with was to talk. When I came to an age, having been an entertainer, I just want to talk all the time. I had no problem with sharing, no problem whatsoever. I have no shame, no control. I just want to share, you know. And I know how much sharing, the miracle about sharing. You know, if I am here alive and well, it's because there is sharing in an A, you know, because it's like washing the house, you know, cleaning out the house when I share. It still touched me listening to my story. You know, I'm going to be 34 years clean, and it's still, when I hear it, and it's still, I still feel it, you know. I'm a very feeling person. I'm an entertainer. I'm a singer. I'm a writer. I was an actress. I was all that. I'm not, now I'm a mother. of a special needs child who is 30 years old, yeah, and a grandmother to my little granddaughter, and go to meetings and having, you know, friends in NA, friends outside NA. But I think it helped me a lot that having that, not having shame, but not being embarrassed to talk. And I think talking saved me a lot, because I had a lot of dirt and a lot of my mind was really corrupted and sick with the disease of addiction, that for me was incorporated all sort of diseases, shopping, lying, stealing, using, you know, I really discovered that I was a kind of a overall addict, and having worked and lived in Paris, and then working in Monaco, and I never knew until I went the first time to a casino, and I could not leave. I was just like I was using. I could not leave. And every night after the shows, because in summertime, when that time everywhere was open until 5 o'clock in the morning, and then I finished my show, and then we will go to the casino. Yeah, and then what I feel grateful and fortunate today is that with the help of Narcotics Anonymous and meetings and steps and sponsorship, is that I was able to transform all that. I took all that, you know, I think I mentioned that before. When I came to NA, I had a different name. I entered NA with my stage name. And then about 3 years clean, someone said to me, but your name, I saw here, your name is Lucia. They don't say Lucy. In England, they never say Lucy. It's always Lucia, Lucy. It was never Lucia. It was always something sounding like Lucia. And then I said, yes. And then he said, but why don't you use your real name? And then it kind of clicked. And then I started using my real name. And then I was 3-4 years clean. And then it was like the first 4 years was all of them was my personality, because I stopped using, but I didn't stop being crazy or an addict. You know, I was very difficult in the beginning. My arrogancy, my lack of knowledge of what I know today, it was huge and made my recovery very difficult. I fought a lot with people, I argued, I knew it more, I knew it all, you know, and then it was like a real battle in the beginning of my recovery. And then when my daughter came, things started changing a little bit because of that love that I was feeling, that love of being a mother. It just transformed a lot of inside me. You know, it brought up, you know, that little girl from Rio de Janeiro, had a loving mother, and I wanted to be a nun, and then I wanted to be a teacher. You know, it kind of, that little girl, it started to come out, you know. I don't act like a nun now or a teacher, but that was the Lucia, yeah. And I'm so grateful for NA, Because when someone mentioned to me Narcotics Anonymous, I knew nothing about it. And I was already living in London for 20 to 19 years. I was living in London and using, yeah. And I started using in Brazil, but my addiction really boomed in London. And I knew nothing about Narcotics Anonymous. Then and then when I was told by this friend who is in recovery, he's gonna be 35 years clean. And he took me to my first meeting. And I was really surprised. I'd never heard of an A or AA. And it was one thing that I didn't share before is that I really had a hard time in a way in my early recovery in London, because the fellowship, it was very white. It was a white fellowship. There were 17 meetings in London, and now they have 290 a week. There were 17 meetings in London. You see how many grew there. And I was the first person of color, you know. And then there was few setbacks that it didn't help me being sick, you know, suffering from a disease that there is no cure that can kill me. And then someone mention or don't talk to me, or you hear it's because she's black, you know, that was, but you know, now I know that all that was lessons. They're all lessons. They're all, it happened because it had to happen. The same way that I went to a treatment center that was foul. I went to a place where it was real difficult, heavily confrontational. And I think I need it. I now in hindsight, I think I needed that. If someone took me to a treatment center like here in Brazil, you go to a treatment center for 35 days and you are medicated the whole day. You got a pill every day. And then you sleep and you don't do anything. And then you do, in 2 days, you do a step 1, 2, and 3. And then you go out and then you come back. Then I mean, when I went, I was there for 11 months. I was 11 months in treatment because I was twisted. Like I said in the story, I was upside down because of the arrogance, because of the position that, I don't know if people go understand that. You have to be an entertainer to know, because when you're an entertainer, obviously I was younger, I was very thin, I was very sexy. And then people wanted to be with you. People pay to be with you. They give you champagne to be with you. You perform in the city, and then what happens? In the end, when you come out of the theater, there's a queue of men, women, all wanted to take you for dinner, to appear with the artists that is in town making, because of the groups that I work, they were full houses. This Brazilian group, you know, it was an amazing show. It was an amazing, with two-part shows that I was all based in Brazilian dancing, folklore. And then the second, it was kind of reveal samba, and then you would be furthest in, you know, and it was full house every day, everywhere we went, all over Europe. And then you come to an A, you come to a treatment center, and they said you're not the center of the universe. What? What are you telling me? I'm not the center of the universe. I am. Fuck you. I am the satanic mess. And they said, you're not. You're just an addict, an alcoholic, a liar. And then, it wasn't this, but I need it. I need it because I discover something really interesting that my arrogance was always hiding behind. It was like when I didn't know, when I couldn't, I would become arrogant because I was weak. You know, it's like arrogancy. It's I forgot the expression that I actually wrote it down because it was very important for me that I wrote it down, but I don't know where it is. I never find anything when I want to find it. But anyway, and then learning that, then it's no, you are being arrogant, you are contesting, you are arguing because you don't know. And you don't want people to know that you don't know. And then when you become aware, then not only you don't know, a lot of people don't know. I mean, you're not alone in that road. Or even if everybody knew and you don't know, you know, you need to be honest about it and not becoming arrogant and making things worse. And I did that for a long time in recovery until the tours that I was giving to me by the steps, by sponsorship, by going to meetings, going to conventions, you know, stop smoking. It was a great thing for me when I stopped smoking as well, because I got rid of it of another addiction. And I became raw. And by becoming raw, people were able, the love and the attention and NA was able to put me back together, and the glue of put me back together was love. Because I tell you, the fellowship where I enter and I grew, and I left England 25 years clean. They really took care of me. They really did it. It was an amazing, and it still is an amazing fellowship. Even though I have those little problems with race or whatever, you know, people are sick as well. people's sickness does that. It's not just the, I found here, arrogance is the denial of my own weakness. You know, when I got that in my head, you know, because I noticed as soon as I got to a point and I didn't know, I would become arrogant. You know, and then I start noticing that I was getting arrogance because I didn't know. And just said, Lucia, come home when you don't know, get all, open your eyes. And it is true, you know. And I see people, and I try to kind of send a little message because that was a great step for my recovery. And when I was 15, I decided to leave my life. I was already serving in A, but I was doing service because a lot of people didn't want to do serve. And then when I started serving in A, there was a lot of people not serving because there was like that group serving, and we kept doing it again. And then I was in the meeting and I heard something and I decided to leave my life based on the three principles of step one: honesty, open mind, and willingness, but with me, to me. Be honest to me, be honest to Lucia, be open mind to Lucia, and be willing to help Lucia. And that, it was another leap in my recovery as well. And I think all that happened because of steps and going to meetings and going to conventions. I travel all over the world. I've been to 12 different countries. I've been to NA meetings in 12 different countries. And some of them, I didn't even know what they were talking about. I didn't, but because the format is pretty much the same, I knew they were saying who is an addict. I knew they were reading why I'm here, you know. And I knew when people suffering because they cried, I said, well, that one is going through stuff, even though I didn't understand the language, like in Russia, in Poland, not Russian, in Poland. I went to meetings in Poland because I went to share in a women's meeting there. And I went to the main meeting and I went to the Middle East. I went to Egypt. And I didn't understand it, but then I made this friend who translated everybody. He translates every share for me. And he translated my, I was in Egypt a week before the revolution. I went back to London. That's when I went to Egypt. It was a trip of my life because in other lives, I was an Egyptian. I was someone told me I was a very bad princess that was sending everybody to have their heads cut off. I don't know what someone told me that, but it got in. You know, I don't know what else. I think my use was so bad that it had to get better. I had to get better. I think that, you know, it's not much I haven't done. Well, one thing that I haven't done, I'm going to mention, was fixing, but I was going to. A week before I got to NA, I was planning to do, because I hate injections, but I was going to start fixing. I was tracing, you know, the drug, and I wasn't, you know, with heroin, but I was 36 kilos when I got to NA. I was bone and skin, that's all. I was a walking cadaver. And really arrogant, really, really messed up, really messed up. Because when you have a good, my husband was a protector, you know, a total protector, and he still does, he still is. Was being now 48, it's going to be 48 years that we're together. Even though he lives in London, I live in Brazil. Geographically, it's better. It's an arrangement that works. But when I go there, we stay with him. My daughter sees him, and I see my son, and it works. I'm here because my daughter needs to be in Brazil. My daughter in London, we couldn't get a school for her. After 18 years old, you can't find a school. Or you put them on an institution, or you have help at home, or you have a home. And I couldn't do that. And when we came to try to live in Brazil, there was a school here. There's a school that she goes. That she's not going this year because the schools are closed. But she's having 5 days classes on Zoom. And anyway, if there is anybody new, anybody coming, one thing that I'm going to say is that believe some people with your heart, even if you don't believe with your mind. Then when people say, it's okay, you can do it, you know, and you're, no, I could, believe with your heart. Keep it there, and then, and don't use, the thing is not using, You don't want it doesn't work. You believe with your heart and God in use. You don't use and believe in your heart, and then you keep that. And then you keep going, struggling. And when you need, just stay in your heart. Because when you put in here, it gets diseased. The disease leaves here in my head. You know, I'm going downstairs out of the blue, and then I think I'm falling down. What's that? I don't want to fall down. You know, but the disease is there. And then an information that is given to me and I put in my heart, you know, I can access later. You say, that person is right. Yes, he's right. I can do it. Believe in the love of NA, of the message. Read the books, read the literature. You know, I was talking to a friend yesterday, and I said to her, have you ever read, for no reason, Who is an Addict? Just the little pamphlet, the beginning of the meeting. And I said, oh, I haven't read it for a long time. Read it. That is us. Who is an addict? A man or woman? Read it. But have you ever recently read why I'm here? What the program offers me? No, I haven't read it. You know, it's very simple. You don't need the whole chapter. Just read that little piece. You know, that is the truth of who I am. Why I'm here. What's the programming? How it works? It's very simple. Obviously, we have loads of pamphlets. They're fantastic. But we're doing some work now on Living Clean. And, you know, that book was written by people who've been in recovery for a long, long, long time. People were living clean. And even though you can see, we can see what happens in there. I mean, we're really fortunate that we still have a group of people that takes over and then resolves things and it gets books done and translated. You know, I don't need translator. I have everything in English, but I buy in Portuguese as well because to read it with friends or sponsors. But, you know, the literature on its own. You need to tell me, Francis, I didn't time myself. You need to give me 2 minutes before I finish, okay? Because I didn't time myself. And and going to meetings, you know, this Francis said, I have lots of friends in Rio. He was Francisco. He was 9 years clean. He was a dolly. He was lovely. And he was keeping our museum. We have an A museum with literature from a long time ago. And he died of COVID-19. And the thing is that he was very sick. And he got better, he came out of the respirators, and in 2 days he died, just like that. We all thought we were gonna see him again, and he died. You know, my dentist has been sick because her husband brought home. And I mean, this disease is everywhere. And it's very sad. And actually, it's getting to me. This thing of being at home is getting at me because I'm very energetic. I'm a person who goes dancing, you know. Saturday, Friday night, I get 2-3 friends and I go dance. I drink water like a lunatic, yeah, and sodas. But I go dancing because dance is in me, you know. And then I go to clubs, you know. And then he's using, but I don't care. And then when I get tired, I just get into my car and come home. You know, I'm not being able to do that. For 9 months, there is no, my birthday, my NA birthday and my birthday in January. I celebrate both and I won't be able to do it this year because I know how serious it is. you know, but it's getting to me, this being, having to be at home. And Monica said, no traveling. I travel a lot with my daughter. And then we're not being able to travel. We went to England, but we went to, we travel in a safe class, yeah, because that isn't, there wasn't too many people in there. And we came back as well. We have the test and we are well. And acceptance. Accept what I cannot change. I cannot change that someone mixed bats with whatever they're in China. And then he came to the whole world. It's I'm totally powerless that I need to accept. And I remember the first week, the first 2 weeks of closing of the quarantine here, I was receiving calls, people getting crazy, 2 weeks, you know, saying, accept, 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 accept. Now I'm waiting people to call me because I'm getting a bit fed up with just having to be in. Because I'm in, you know, I go out to the bank, but I wear masks all the time, everywhere. And, you know, just meetings, literature, a sponsorship, a man should have a man's sponsor, a woman should have a woman's sponsor. Do the steps, go to meeting. It's virtual meetings. Yes, I'm going. I'm going. You want me to share? Yes, I come and share. You know, because it reminds me. It's good for me to hear, you know, what I say, because I think I talk a little bit recovery, and then it's good for me to hear. Yeah. And I don't know. You made your point. That's finished. Is it finished? Okay. Okay. Thank you very much for the invitation. I love you all. You know, I try to count. I think there is about 90 to 100 people in this meeting, and then I don't know if everybody is listening or there, but it's been great. And it was great to hear Monica and Conor. I had some things to do earlier. But thank you very much. Thank you all for listening.
And then I got three beautiful granddaughters.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.